welcome to Sipfa Speaks. My name is Kriti, and on this month's episode, we will discuss the future of our cities and how we can make leveling up a success by addressing key challenges. Sipfa, in partnership with the University of Birmingham City Ready, published in February a report on investing in regional equality, which found 10 success factors that will address regional inequalities in England. Investing for the long term, knowledge exchange, efficient evaluation, shared will and partnership, to name a few, are some of the crucial factors identified in our report to realize this ambitious vision. Building an equal, prosperous nation requires collaboration between academics, practitioners, and local authorities, which is why I'm delighted to have a mixture of all three on our podcast today. I'm joined by Anne Green, Professor of Regional Economic Development and Co-Director at City Ready, University of Birmingham, Tom Davis, Associate Director at Social Finance UK, and Leigh Brummel, Director of Counter Context, a leading communications consultancy. Leigh was also the Deputy Leader of Sheffield City Council up to March 2017. I would like to welcome all our speakers. Anne, I would like to begin with you. Our report mentions the need to learn from international exemplars, which identify success factors that can accelerate leveling up in the UK. Why do you think England has struggled with regional equality? And from your experience, why hasn't leveling up worked as promised?
Well, I think it's worth highlighting at the outset that when you're facing deep-seated challenges, there isn't necessarily any quick fix. As you've outlined, we looked at various success factors in previous work, looking at international examples of places that had levelled up. And then in our work in England, we looked at Enfield, Dudley, South Yorkshire and Tees Valley. And we found that some of the success factors were evident in England, but that overall implementation had been a bit more challenging. And I'd probably highlight at least three issues that we faced in England. I think, first of all, there's the issue of funding. We could say that there's been insufficient funding for levelling up. We've had short-term funding, and this has been a specific challenge in England. We've also faced the issue of where funding is available. There are issues about how flexible it is to use it. So there's not only the amount of funding that's available, but the extent to which people in the city regions can actually utilise that funding easily for the purposes that they would like. Then there's something about capacity constraints, and I think that's a real issue for local authorities engaged in levelling up. And we know that local authorities are under financial pressure. We know over the longer term, some of that capacity has been removed. And I think it is going to be difficult until that capacity recovers. And then finally, I think we also have to have good multi-level collaboration and partnership working. And while we've got some of that, we have got good examples of that, there's always scope for further work there. So I think that's what I would particularly point to in answer to your question.
Thank you, Anne, for summarising those three key challenges so well. You touched upon short-term funding, and I would like to build a little more on that. The report talks about how local authorities are hindered in delivering their visions for economic development by short-term funding pots. When it comes to Birmingham, Sandville and Solihull, the media narrative suggests that there has been no sign of levelling up. Which key factors from the report do you think would benefit the West Midlands? And what are the key challenges towards implementing the levelling up plans in that region?
I think there are a number of issues here. I think it's worth highlighting that in an area such as the West Midlands, there are some hyperlocal variations in circumstances, and this can actually explain why there may be particular perceptions about what is happening and what's not happening. I think the issues that we've highlighted about how funding can be utilised, we do have a bit of a way forward now because we have a deeper devolution deal in the West Midlands Combined Authority area. And I think that should enable more flexibility and also enable us to be more sensitive to the needs of particular places. We do have examples of how that's been done in somewhere like Birmingham and in East Birmingham in particular, where there's been a partnership for people and place, which has been tackling issues about young people and the opportunities that they face moving into the labour market. So there are issues and help that we can have for place-based policy where we can look at particular subgroups, particular challenges and focus on them. So I think that is a particular way forward, given the sorts of challenges we've outlined.
Thank you, Anne. That's really helpful. I wonder, Tom and Leigh, if you would have anything to add to that or any other point of view that you would like to share with our listeners.
From my perspective, the reasons why levelling up hasn't worked are so multifaceted, to be honest with you, could probably do with a few hours rather than a few minutes. But I think regional inequalities, to the extent that we have them in the UK, they do exceed most of the Western developed nations. So there is something particular to Britain in this regard. And some of those are absolutely fundamental to the kind of over-centralised London-based system that we have in the UK. And just the way that central government has tended to kind of take on the primary role for managing more and more areas of the country, very different from the original days of corporations when local government was first set up, when the private sector actually instituted a lot of local government with an aim of very much having that very local controls and powers to be able to help their local areas. We've moved over time to a much more centralised system than most countries have in terms of how funding is distributed, the powers that local government has, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, so if levelling up, if some of those circumstances caused the issue of levelling up in the first place and the need for levelling up to rebalance the country, then you were going to have to really address those problems quite fundamentally to be able to find a solution to those problems. And I think there were some attempts have been made at that, like Boris Johnson looked at trying to rebalance how Treasury assesses the validity of schemes and whether they get funding or not, which has been a big problem for places outside the southeast. So there was some kind of attempt to address that, and the levelling up fund, which is what councils have had to bid for to do regeneration projects, is funding that is welcome, but it's been, as Anne was saying, a long way short of anything that was realistically needed to be able to address that problem fundamentally. And certainly the level of powers and devolution, although again moving in the right direction, it's relatively modest by international standards and probably not enough to get us to where we wanted to be to give that opportunity to address levelling up fundamentally. I think, you know, they're kind of some of the key points, I think.
Thank you, Leigh. That's very helpful. And you did mention devolution, and I know we are going to come back to you to discuss that issue in detail. I would now like to turn to Tom. For our listeners, Tom joins us from Social Finance UK, which is a non-profit advisory organization that works with local and regional government to fund and scale solutions to complex social issues. Tom, I read a recent article of yours in which you talk about the concept of community wealth to help local government break out of cycles of short-termism and bureaucracy. Would you like to share with us your experience with communities on ground which can help overcome funding challenges around levelling up?
Sure, and thank you for having me on. So I think in the SIPFA report, I was struck in particular by some of the analysis about where England has struggled to tackle regional inequalities compared to some of its international counterparts. And I think lots of the reasons cited for that were things like short-term funding pots, complex and bureaucratic funding processes from central government, you know, which in turn create real capacity constraints on local levels to administer and monitor these new funding programs. That certainly resonated with me and lots of the work that we do with local areas. And there's obviously, you know, ways that central government can try to alleviate some of those challenges. I'm thinking of things like, you know, a recent, very short spending review windows, for example, but that's, you know, probably a conversation for another day. I'm more interested, I think, in how local and combined authorities can step outside of some of that short-termism and create some of its own weather about tackling local priorities and creating some of the consistency and sort of clarity of vision that I think is needed to ultimately to make a dent in very long-standing inequalities. So community wealth funds that you mentioned, I think, are a very interesting, you know, an emerging model, but a very exciting example of ways that local and regional government can do this. And there are a number of local authorities, a number of combined authorities that have either set up or are in the process of setting up their own community wealth funds, which are, in very brief, pots of money to support local VCC organisations, often social businesses, to grow, develop and ultimately improve the strength of local economies. And there's loads of different sorts of nuances and different ways in which these work. But there are some really core characteristics, I think, that make the model interesting. One is that they aim to develop social infrastructure of a place. So that's the physical places and spaces, the people that use those places and the networks between them and the social capital of people in an area, and also the health and diversity of VCC organisations and local institutions. And there's a lot of evidence for the importance of that social infrastructure as the foundation for making a change in some of the more visible markers of inequality, things like economic and health outcomes. There's a strong focus in lots of these local initiatives to focus on that social infrastructure, as well as some of the more visible outcomes like economic outcomes.
Thank you, Tom, for answering that question in great detail. SIPFA's research into investing in regional equality also identified a 10th specific factor to England, which is transferable learning and knowledge exchange. So the report notes that knowledge exchange is of vital importance, but is not prioritized enough. And one of the reasons that it mentions is how local authorities do not have the time and capacity to address this. So what do you think are some of the ways in which we can facilitate transferable learning and knowledge exchange to accelerate leveling up?
So I, again, couldn't agree more with the addition of that 10th factor to the 9 identified in other places. I think it's really hard when it comes to things like economic development, with no strategy duties, for example, for local authorities to, you know, either guide their activity, but also create some space for knowledge sharing with others and internal learning. We certainly see a lot of, you know, energy and willingness to do more of this when we speak to places, but, you know, just really hard capacity constraints. I think there are actually some positive signs, though. More and more central government programs that we see are building in time, budget, sort of space for learning. You know, Social Finance, for example, worked recently with DLAC on the Changing Futures Programme, which funded 15 local areas to address multiple disadvantage, to be a learning partner to all those places, to both help individual places to do learning, but also cross-pollinate some of the findings across the 15 areas. And we see this happening more and more in other central government programmes. I think it's probably fair to say that's still kind of bleeding edge. But I think the direction of travel is positive, and so local authorities, you know, others can really make the case for more of that in future. And then that's probably something that, you know, local governments, regional government can do themselves. I think it's probably a sort of culture and leadership change, really, to value the value of the learning that can take place within a program, and also value the knowledge that can be shared across places. You know, again, with limited capacity to do these sorts of things and make a dent in inequalities. I think places just, you know, that there's an awful lot of places to learn, both to make quicker progress and to understand the sort of, you know, things that do and don't work from their counterparts elsewhere. So I think there's commitment at a real senior leadership level to change culture and put funding and time into the infrastructure that can then can facilitate some of that learning.
Thank you, Tom. You did touch upon programs, and Anne, I wonder if you would have, from an academic point of view, something to share on how to facilitate transferable knowledge exchange.
Yes, I think what I would say about facilitating transferable knowledge exchange is probably worth the learning partner approach, which was just mentioned. There are also opportunities to share knowledge by briefings, blogs, coming together in short workshops. And I think what is also important is to try and get that trusted space, because it's very easy to share something about which has been successful and you're very proud of. But actually, mm-hmm. What is really important is to learn as we go along and try and be able to to say, well, we tried this, but it didn't really work. What's happening here? What seem to be the critical factors? And I think universities and research institutes and others can play an anchor role here in trying to create that space of shared learning across local partners. So I think the key message is to try to do it and to perhaps do it in more than one way, and hopefully that will work. So that's what I think on that particular issue.
That's a good message, Anne. Thank you so much for that. Speaking of transferable knowledge brings me to South Yorkshire. The report talks about forums in place that allow authorities in South Yorkshire to benefit from international policy exchange, which is why I would now like to bring in Leigh, who has extensive experience of working as part of a local authority in his previous role at the Sheffield City Council. One of the key points, Leigh, that the report finds is that in comparison to international city regions, South Yorkshire is limited in how it can address regional inequalities by a lack of fully devolved powers. I know you mentioned this in the beginning of the conversation as well, but from your experience at the City Council, what can be done to address the inflexibility in the system?
To give one example that we faced, and this may have changed recently because I've not been involved in the council for 7 years now, but certainly when I was in post and we were, and I led on economic development and regeneration. And I remember, obviously, South Yorkshire is a big exporting area, about a long kind of proud history of that, and now has some very particular advanced players in advanced manufacturing and things like that. But one of the problems we had, for example, was that the data in terms of what we were actually exporting and to where and how much was all held nationally by the Yorkshire and Humber Agency of Department for Trade. And so we actually didn't have access to that data for Sheffield. We had access to that data at a Yorkshire and Humber level. And that, for example, meant that we weren't, you know, if you were going to create a strategy about how you're going to grow your exports and where the key markets are for you and things like that, you've either got to go and kind of ask every single business in the area, which is possible, but a huge task, and you've got to maintain that and that data sharing and that trust that's required to do that, or you need the data from the body that is collecting that data and access at the kind of granular level so you can actually tailor a strategy towards that. So that's the kind of thing that we were talking in our first devolution deal, which was the first city region devo deal after Greater Manchester for the Sheffield City Region. We were talking to central government to be able to try to negotiate to have greater access to that data so we could tailor a strategy around that. I think more beyond that, I think there's the point about knowledge exchange, transfer, learning, things like that. To make that all work, I think you do genuinely need a partnership of industry, local government and academia. And like a lot of our city regions, Sheffield's got two big universities in the area, but the kind of the knowledge transfer between those institutions and the cooperative work and partnership towards a single strategy is absolutely fundamental to be able to take that forward. And that strategy in terms of economic growth and development, and you know which industries you're going to pick as the kind of ones you're really going to kind of focus on in particular, and a strategy for them and how that's going to be realized in a partnership approach, has to also sit in a wider kind of city approach about making sure that your transportation works for people, that you are actively going out and promoting and promoting investment in the region, that the skills strategy that you've developed as an area feeds directly into those industries that you've identified to help make that work. And in South Yorkshire, there's some really good best practice in terms of how that's working with the Advanced Manufacturing Research Centre that's been set up between primarily it was in first instance Boeing and the University of Sheffield, but the council and other bodies have kind of helped facilitate that with funding grants and so on to develop that. But that needs all taken to the next level to be able to make that really, really work. And I think a good example of where that kind of partnership works is Eindhoven. We went to see Eindhoven in the Netherlands, which had a really good partnership approach between academia, business and local government that really, really worked. And there was a strategy that was completely integrated with everything else the city did as a whole, rather than see local government as leading a city, it should be seen as a kind of a joint undertaking by business, private sector and academia, as well as local government. And obviously then it leads to how do you create all that takes capacity, and how do you create the capacity to be able to do that. And I think in terms of tying that back to devolution, so probably more than we have at the moment, greater powers to be able to control transport, greater powers to be able to identify and set a skills plan at all levels, right from kind of young people coming out of school up to adult continued learning, and the funding to be able to do that. They all have to link in with that strategy that's based on knowledge transfer and partnership to grow an economy.
Thank you, Leigh. Those are very good suggestions. And shared will and partnership is one of the first key success factors that the CIPFA report identifies to make leveling up a success. And you also talked about access to data, which is also important from a monitoring and evaluation aspect. So evaluation is crucial for establishing the success or failure of any policy. In 2021, we read in the Leveling Up prospectus, which said that local authorities should set out a proportionate plan for project level monitoring and evaluation. However, CIPFA report notes that Sheffield City Council has been hindered in measuring outcomes by the lack of a strategic framework and a focus on project outcomes rather than outcomes at the city level. So could you share with our listeners from your experience the impact of this on ensuring regional equality in Sheffield? How important is it to address this aspect, and what can be done to build capacity?
Yeah, I think capacity is the key issue in many respects. And we started lots of programs to be able to monitor projects. And obviously, it's absolutely right that you want to, if you're going to be able to do something, do a implement a strategy, then of course you want to be able to kind of basically, first of all, have the evidence basis for why you're going to do that strategy in the first place. And then you want to then be able to monitor how that goes and take the learning from that to feed back into other things that you want to do thereafter. I think that all does take capacity. I think that's been the kind of one of the key terms that we've used in the discussion today. There is such little capacity in local government at the moment at both, but not so much at combined authority level, but definitely at local authority level, to be able to undertake that kind of work. And that obviously is then a gap in terms of being able to kind of not only undertake a strategy, but then take the learning from that to be able to enhance those strategies moving forward. If you don't have the required devolution of powers and funding, you find yourself unable to actually independently decide or determine as easily what strategies are right for your local area. And instead, what you end up doing is you often find yourself chasing funding pots that are based on a strategy that may or may not come forward at any particular time that's set by central government. So, for example, just on a very, very basic level, if you were taking it in a kind of transport context, for example, and you wanted to develop a tram system to help connect people to local employment sites and things like that, and government was giving out grants at that particular time for active travel measures, then that would prevent you. You would have to move forward with a strategy to develop active travel measures rather than perhaps one that you might have identified that's more prominent locally in terms of a tram network, because there wasn't the funding available for implementing tram networks, but there was for active travel. And that can happen, innovation zones. It depends, whatever central government will determine at the time of their policies is the way that it tends to kind of nudge local areas to develop their strategies, because the only available funding is the funding that's allocated through government departments. And so whilst ever you're having to adapt your own strategy to try to fit with a national strategy that's been set by central government, then you were inevitably, it weakens your ability to identify a strategy and implement a strategy that's relevant for you. So I think all that, being able to identify a strategy that's relevant to your area, should be the first port of call before you then think about, right, this is a strategy that's right for our area. How are we going to evaluate that? How are we going to, what's the body of evidence for that strategy? And how are we going to take the learning from that thereafter to be able to implement a more successful economic and regeneration policy thereafter? So I think the two are very closely linked. And yeah, I mean, I think I was talking to a leader of a major local authority just recently. I think one thing we haven't touched upon, again, it's probably for another time, but the requirement for local authorities to deliver social care is a problem that at first, or a challenge that at first seems not relevant to this debate, but it's actually taking up an increasing amount of budgets of local authorities that they have left. So I think the leader was telling me about 70% of their budget was now taken up by the requirement to provide adult social care. And what that essentially does, and I could see this happening in Sheffield during my time there, is it squeezes the available capacity and budget for everything else, because it's taken up an ever-increasing proportion of a local authority's budget to be able to deliver adult social care. So I think finding a solution to that problem at a national level, that needs a national solution for social care, actually feeds back to the ability and the capacity of local authorities to be able to do things like good data monitoring, evaluation, and the learning based on outcomes for cities and not just individual projects.
Right. Very well said, Lee. That's a very wise suggestion as well. And I wonder if Tom and Anne would like to build further on that, on monitoring and evaluation.
I think there is this capacity issue, but I think there's also trying to make it proportionate and think about what can be done with indicators that are available. But also, I think, to keep in mind that as well as the quantitative data, which is extremely important, also to keep in mind the value of some qualitative and deep insights into some of the issues, particularly for some projects where you're thinking about pride in place and those sorts of issues, to actually ask subjectively, do people think things have improved? So I think mm-hmm. what I'm saying there is it's useful to have a mix of methods, if at all possible. So I think that's what I would like to add on this very important monitoring and evaluation space, really. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Tom?
Yeah, I think I had a very similar comment actually to Anne there. So I might just sort of build on it a bit. I think the proportionality question is really key. We've talked a lot about how local and combined authorities maybe lack capacity, but there are, you know, huge demands on them to do monitoring evaluation. And, you know, the quantitative sort of impact evaluation is certainly really important. Governments committed to, you know, evaluate a greater proportion of their programs in that way, but they need to recognize the sort of capacity that requires and fund it properly. But if we assume that, you know, that's not going to necessarily change overnight, the question, the decision for local authorities is exactly what they can do. So I absolutely agree with what Anne was saying around qualitative data as well. But I'd also sort of get, maybe, you know, take that a step further and say, how are they going to build that into the way that they continually change, learn, reflect on what they're doing and what's working, and make short-term changes, you know, rather than waiting for the impact evaluation or the sort of you know, the really incontrovertible evidence that something either has or hasn't worked. How are they going to, you know, work with other local authorities or other regions to continually be improving and changing the thing that they're doing? So it's sort of living the learning and the evaluation, as well as keeping it proportionate, I think is key for me.
Thank you, Tom. That's very helpful. And the last question for all our speakers is, since elections are around the corner, what's the first thing the next government should do to address regional inequalities in England? And I would like to start with Anne, if you could describe in a few words, what should be the focus of the next government?
I think I would like to particularly point to something that will be no surprise to listeners of having heard what we've said. There is a real need to reinvest in the capacity of local government. And seeing as we've signalled that already, I'll just add a second thing. I think it's important to recognise the importance of local assets and social infrastructure to places. That is very, very important. And if we dismantle it very quickly, it takes time to build up. So I think those are the things that I would like to highlight for the next government.
Thank you, Anne. Moving on to Tom.
I think Anne and I are potentially reading from the same script here, as I had a very similar point to make. I think to make a similar comment, what's the role of communities in future policy? I'm sure this is a thing that would resonate with Labour, government and Labour voters as well. I would like to see any future policy consider how to place communities in the real forefront. And as I was saying there, that social infrastructure in place is for me the necessary condition really for any you know, future tackling of health or economic inequalities. It's a sort of foundation stone for those things. And I think communities that are most knowledgeable people about where that might be lacking in a place and what to do about it. So I'd encourage them to think about that, and also how they can bring in either a formal or less formal way other partners, external partners, foundations, trusts, local grant makers, businesses. How can they be a sort of a front and center? What's the front and center role for them in future policy and funding programs as well? Because I think it takes all of those institutions to really make a dent in improving social infrastructure in left behind places.
Thank you so much, Tom. And finally, Lee.
Yeah, I completely agree with the last two points as well. I think for me, you said the first thing the next government should do, and I think a couple of things. I think all those things, the social infrastructure and capacity issues are about, there really needs to be a solution sought for the funding of local government that ensures that capacity exists, because they can often be the ones who help to develop that social infrastructure and capacity within communities. And I think, so getting us out of this kind of what it feels like a crisis for local government at the moment. I think, it's a non-party issue in many respects. Most people are saying that we can't continue in this vein. So I think finding a solution for that is going to be fundamental, that gives stability in the system, that allows you to plan long-term planning capacity. And then I think that kind of also lends itself to, I don't feel like the country at the moment has a particular strategy for what is the purpose of local government. Is it there to just simply administer towns and cities and communities? Is it there to drive forward economies and regions? Is it there to be a facilitator of partnership working? Is it there to deliver core services, including social care? I think at the moment we don't really have a strategy for local government, and I think that's probably been a problem at some level for decades in the UK, but it seems particularly pertinent now. And I think if we're going to find solutions to many of these problems and the role and identify what the role of local government is in unlocking all that, then we're going to have to work out what the purpose of local government is, and then we can start working out what it needs, how we'd help us deliver that capacity to be able to deliver that, and so on.
That's very wisely. Thank you so much, Anne, Tom and Lee, for joining us today. It has been an insightful discussion, and to all our listeners for stopping by. If you found this episode useful, make sure to follow us on social media for more and to never miss an interesting conversation. Previous episodes of SIPFA Speaks can be found on SIPFA's website or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We'll be back next month with another episode. Until then, goodbye.